Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to discover all of our previous episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter at Irish_TechNews and on Facebook at facebook.com/IrishTechNews. Thanks and enjoy the listening.
Okay, so today on the Irish Tech News Podcast, we have somebody who's definitely an expert in what they do and has a long provenance of doing it. So I'm very pleased that we have him on. So first of all, who do we have the pleasure of talking to today?
Well, my name's Steve Allen. I live in Kenmare in County Kerry. I've lived in Ireland since 1974. I came here when I was 18. I've seen many, many changes, but I was always attracted to the alternative lifestyle, one might say, which included alternative technology. And that has led me through various other different crafts and activities, working with horses, being a harness maker, designing houses, building houses to the use of hemp as a material. And seeing as I then wrote the first book about that subject, I've become an expert on that.
Yeah, very much so. And wow, since the 70s. So, I mean, You were kind of part of that movement where, you know, the Germans came over, the Dutch, the English, and did a lot to revive and restore buildings and places that had fallen into decay. Would that be a fair summary of what it was like when you came over in the 70s?
Yeah, I don't think we came here with the aim of doing that particularly. We just came here because there was space to be different and to live that sort of adventurous, experimental lifestyle. And the basic thing was that the land was very empty because so many people had left for a variety of reasons. And the ones that were left behind, in most cases, were very pleased to see anybody moving back in, especially young people that then had children and revitalized the community in a small way. And so we learned a lot from what was there, what was known, and what was, of course, evolving through our own cultural background of alternative technology and the whole Earth catalogue, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, yes. And I know many people have cited that as a real inspiration. And even the people that we met on Cape Clear similarly had old copies of the whole Earth catalogue lying around. So, you know, people had described it as like a pre-online Wikipedia source of inspiration. So yeah, that makes sense. You've come a long way in the evolution of building with hemp. So for those that don't really know much about hemp, this is both using something that's been around for a long time, but also with some very new ways of using it. Would that be a fair way of characterizing hemp, that it's both old but also a new innovation as well?
Certainly it's the new use or the reuse of it. It's certainly an ancient crop. It's been around since probably the dawn of humanity and the interaction of farming. It's an incredibly broad resource crop, in as much as it produces fibers, it produces food, it produces biomass, and it produces beneficial effects for the land. And of course, the farming aspect of it is really where we have to start, because without a crop, we don't have any hemp building or any other hemp materials. So the impacts of farming have been realized, the beneficial impacts, because we've suddenly had very extreme needs to change. And the needs we have are to go away from intensive farming, both for grain and tillage crops and for animal and livestock rearing, and we need to find alternative ways of producing the food that we eat and doing it in a way that doesn't damage the land. So if we can produce a source of protein, essential fatty acids and fibers that we can use to build with or use as a more biomass material in one crop, and that crop in the growing of it improves the soil by shading it, by locking nutrients in, by returning nutrients to the soil, then we are also on a good idea. If it can then also store CO2 rather than emitting it, even after the tillage of the soil and the use of the machinery to plant and to harvest hemp, it still has a carbon storing ability, so much so that it stores around about 1.8 to 2 tons of CO2 per you per ton of material harvested. So nearly double the amount of CO2 is absorbed during its lifestyle. And so it also provides us with a very other important aspect, which is the need to stop throwing nutrients away, i.e. our human waste, and to stop manufacturing and importing nitrous oxide emitting and other gas emitting fertilizers, which are just wrecking the soil and draining the actual natural nutrients from it, and not adding any to it. And so we desperately need to use human waste, because it's a completely ridiculous resource that we're throwing away, and other animal waste can be used more efficiently as well. But the way to do that is to find a way so that it's safe to do so, because people have a fear, obviously, of they might be eating some food that's been grown using human waste, and it's perfectly safe to do so if that human waste has gone through the right decomposing cycle. However, if we can use it on a crop that we're not using for food, that we're mainly producing for fiber, such as hemp, we can use that first year growing the hemp, and then we can think about growing crops that for food. So we'll have benefited in twice. We'll have not be having to get rid of our own waste and polluting the seas and rivers by doing so, which, even though we have high-tech versions of cleaning human waste these days, it's still not as good as putting it on the soil and letting nature do its breaking down. So those are all really important aspects of what hemp can do. Now, what do we do with that, and how do we make it valid, you know, a valid thing for farmers to turn towards?
So in Ireland, I guess, in general, how suited is hemp for growing in Ireland? And I get the feeling that it is, but then that second step of potentially closing the loop in terms of the fertilizer, is that a thing, or is that an idea that you're proposing that could happen in the future? I guess, does it happen, or can it happen?
Well, it's not happening in exactly that way, as I say now. All crops need fertilizer. I mean, there are lots of wild proposals online that hemp doesn't need any inputs, it's this, that and the other, and it can be described maybe as a wonder crop, so as many other crops can, but it does need inputs of fertilization. All plants do, especially plants that are used to growing as a tillage crop and that need to compete with each other to grow in size and in the way we want. So we need to find alternative ways. Everything we do, whether it's the growing of the crop, whether it's the processing, whether it's the using it in construction or in any other materials later on, all has to be closed loop. We have to make the whole plan, a cradle to cradle, closed loop, donut economics, all the ideas that make sense have to be incorporated. There's no point excluding those ideas that make sense just because, well, we've got a greedy short-term idea just down the road, and that won't work. We only have a very short time to address the problems we have, but we need to understand that it's not going to be a fast buck. So what do we make out of this hemp crop? Why are we going to grow hemp other than the food aspects or the benefit to the land? And that is that the materials we make are basically providing insulation. It's not just insulation, and it's wrong to think of it as just insulation, but primarily it's insulation. And that is the very important aspect that buildings need to be energy efficient and comfortable. And they need to be done in a way that's healthy and safe, unlike cladding a building with Kingspan expanded polyurethane foam, which obviously is not safe. And of course, it's not healthy. It's not healthy for the materials around it. I know of several examples where people have used Kingspan thinking, oh, they're going to really insulate their houses. They've made it so airtight that the wood that's in that structure is rotting because the moisture can't go anywhere. And so we can't work against nature, we have to work with it. And so the materials that we need to find are what we term as breathable. Now, that term has been taken by engineers, and they've made multi-layer materials or components with all these factory-made components that all are either made from plastics or other materials that are energy intensive. And then they say, all right, well, that breathes, but it doesn't really breathe. When you talk about breathing, you're talking about wearing a cotton shirt and a woolly jumper. If you run around a field in a plastic bag that's got lots of little holes in it, you're not going to feel the same as you do if you run around a field with a cotton T-shirt on. It's going to be sweaty because you have to sort of force the moisture through it. And so in their experiments in laboratories where no house is actually built, they can apply different pressures and show that things work in ways that they actually in nature they don't. So we need to find alternatives. And if we can find a material, in fact, we found a material that we can create a monolithic wall that is that performs as all those multiple layers can do, that is basically airtight, certainly airtight enough to be very comfortable, that both insulates and stores heat, then we found something that's wonderful. And that's exactly what this material we call hempcrete, which is a mixture of the wood chips from the core of the stem, if you're once you've put it through processing to separate the outer bast, which contains the fibers, which can be used for many, many things. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the wood chips that are formed by cracking the stem and separating the two materials are then used as an aggregate with a hygroscopic binder, preferably or usually something that's made including lime, but there are various things you can add to that to speed up setting times, to create a harder substance, whatever. And that you then stick those wood chips together in a form of concrete, if you like, but it's nothing like concrete, and we're not trying to replicate concrete. It's just a set masonry-like material that we can cast, we can spray, we can preform into blocks, and we can assemble to create an envelope. And that's the most important thing we're talking about. Structure, that's another thing. Structure is something that engineers can talk about. They can talk about steel frames, wooden frames, concrete frames, brick frames, all sorts of piers and stuff. But we can use bricks to make arches in the way they used to, so to not need, not so much have some, not so much need for lintels and beams. So we can make materials that can create an envelope around a structure that is really comfortable and healthy to live in and can use virtually no energy, very, very much reduced energy. And that's been proved time and time again in large commercial buildings, especially in the UK, where all the predictions for the energy costs that were made to start with have then been disproved, and they ended up saving up to £40,000 a year in energy costs, both for cooling and heating. And so those are the kind of things we desperately need to do, because at the moment, the globe is on a journey to make sure everybody have air conditioning, which is completely ludicrous. We'd never, ever have the energy to be able to power that. And if we did, we'd burn the atmosphere up very, very quickly. Mm. So we have to think, well, what is the alternative? Is there an alternative? And of course, people lived for many thousands of years without air conditioning. Now, we've now moved into areas of the world, especially places, for instance, like Florida, where nobody lived before. Very, very few people lived there before. Now, millions of people live there, and they're all totally reliant on air conditioning. Now, there are ways of building houses in tropical-type regions and hot places where natural elements of design can be used to cool things down. Things like wind towers, all sorts of stuff like that can be used imaginatively by architects that are trained to think about these things, rather than the appalling architectural modules that are used in universities and colleges around the world at the moment, which haven't changed for 20 years. Imagine how much things have changed in the last 20 years, and they haven't changed their modules for 20 years. And if they have, they've stuck ecological building in as a sort of novelty item, as like, you know, for a brief morning of talk. Insane. Anyway. So we need to have this different type of approach to building. We need to have the materials that will do that. We have them. We can provide them. We can grow them locally to where they're needed. And we then need to, of course, turn those raw materials into those products. And that entails processing. And there are two ways you can go about processing. One is with a very small machine in a small setup where, for instance, a builder who has requirement and the customers that need hemp building materials, they want to build a house, they want to repair their house, retrofit or whatever, and so he contracts a local farmer to grow that hemp, and it's processed between the two of them somehow, and we have a small little local enterprise scheme like that, which would be wonderful, and it would be a fantastic thing to establish all over the world. But at the same time, farmers are in the mode they're in, and they like things on a big scale. Governments like to support things on a big scale. And so we need to look at what are the options of large-scale processing. And you can buy a processing factory for around about 2 million. There are some a little bit less, some a bit, quite a bit more. But that will turn your bale of hemp into the wood chips and the fibres. Fibres all nice and clean, the wood chips all clean and bagged up, ready to go. But you really need to have more industries, more markets for that material. And ideally, you build a unit that does the whole thing, that you put a bale of hemp in one end, that wood chips, fibre insulation, and then modular housing come out the other end. So you've got three markets there, if you like, the retrofitting market, the new build market, and modular housing market. You could also be making some form of panels, like a sort of chipboard type materials, and that would could also be part of the modular housing unit. That might add quite a bit to it, to add that part of the manufacturing process to this complex, if you like. But something like that could be established in the centre of a country the size of Ireland, and that it would facilitate farmers for a 60-mile radius around that. And that could also be replicated maybe 60 miles further south and have another one. And it would only, it would greatly assist the house building market. But to build the number of houses that we actually need, we would probably need 10 or 20 of these factories. That's obviously crazy thinking right at this moment, where farmers are only just getting their heads around growing a different version of hemp recently, which is a real green bubble, unfortunately, the whole CBD thing. And that's interrupted the whole growth potential of hemp construction and the basic fiber farming, because there was the quick money dream of like, oh, we're all going to get loads of rich because everybody's going to be wearing CBD impregnated yoga pants. And that's, you know, not obviously not the case. And of course, a very expensive herbal supplement, even if it's really good for you, is not going to be a possibility for most people in this country, especially with the coming economics ideas. So we've got to think about the real possibilities for our farming, how we can reduce the number of livestock and still produce food and still have something that's valuable for the farmers to produce, how we can do tillage much better and how we can do building much better. The establishment of a factory like that would probably provide something like 50 jobs or more, and there would be other associated jobs that would be coming from the installation of materials, the improvement of retrofitting for insulation, which of course is something the government are looking to do. But of course, at the moment, we don't have that many potential ecological materials. They're all synthetic materials, fiberglass, rock wool, foam, plastic foams, which are not healthy to be installing. So we have to offer up something different. And part of the cost of establishing all those factories or that factory would be going through the processes we'd need to be able to prove to Sustainable Energy Authority Ireland and to the building codes that our product is exactly as they would want. We're not trying to slip something under the door here. We've got something that is totally appropriate to all the regulations that should be and are in place. It's not flammable. It's not dangerous when if it does smoulder. It doesn't rot that easily. It isn't. It's rodent resistant. It's safe in a fire situation with regard to structure. It's structurally strong enough. So we don't want to cheat them. We're not going to be doing false tests. We want the tests to be done properly, mm-hmm. but they are very expensive, and it's like a club you've got to get into. So it would be great if there was some kind of a scheme to incentivize the testing and approval of natural materials. But within the EU and within modern governments, you know, there is a resistance to help anything that might help private enterprise. And so it's very difficult, you know, who's going to benefit from this. But, you know, we probably need to go the more established investment route to try and get investment. But we need to tell those investors that this is not quick buck. This is preserving the planet for your children and grandchildren, not about how much money you can make and how much you can rub your hands together, how quickly. It's going to be a 10-year type of return rather than a 5-year, because you have to let things have time to establish themselves, and you can't force things. If you force things, then you start to cut corners, and then things don't work. So this is a plan that has to be closed loop, cradle to cradle. It has to follow ideas like donut economics, so that we don't just have a crazy pyramid scheme, which of course pyramids are usually in reality the upside down, the economic pyramids. And so it's some crazy lunatic at the bottom of the pyramid imagining all these things that end up in the finer divisions of things like the hedge funds and other derivatives, which are completely ludicrous. And eventually the weight of that all drains down to the bottom of that pyramid, and it crushes those lunatics at the bottom supporting such an idea. So it doesn't trickle down in the way we'd like to think of it. It's the other way around, really. And so if we're going to make things fairer, we're going to have a society that is realistic and has some kind of hope for the future, then it's not about more, it's about better. So these products,
yeah, like, and I guess it's a more holistic approach. And as you outline that, I mean, we have interviewed some venture capitalists who are specifically looking to invest in sustainable initiatives and projects for the long term, and the whole rise of B Corps, where it's planet first and profit only comes if it, like Patagonia, if it serves the planet. So I hear what you're saying, and there does need to be a paradigm shift, but at the same time, it is good that we have seen investors looking to go down that route. A question I have for you is, so your book was written in 2006, and then there was a revised edition in 2012 and 2016. And equally, you've been to Costa Rica and Nepal and South Africa and many places to help people with hemp construction. So we're in Ireland and in these other places. Are we seeing already a lot more hemp building, hemp in construction already? I guess what I'm saying is, are we just advocating why it's good, or do we now have a rising number of actual built examples to demonstrate? Like, what's your sense on that?
Well, there must be at least 20 complete hemp homes in Ireland, if not more. Hundreds of renovation retrofitting projects that have been done, especially old stone cottages that have had hemp applied as a plaster, hemp and lime plaster applied to the inside of it, which makes an enormous difference just on its own. But we've applied hempcrete as an external insulation around masonry buildings. We've built new builds, we've built extensions, all sorts of things. We've done it with hand casting, we've done it with big spray machines. I've just recently brought in a new spray system into the country that has particular applications. It can be used to build whole houses, but it uses a binder that's formulated in France and can only really be sourced from France because the geology is particular to a particular region there. And so we might be able to find alternative versions of that binder, but the way the machine works, it is able to apply a very insulating version of hempcrete, because hempcrete can be made in a variety of different densities and proportions. And so we can apply a very insulating layer of up to 3 or 4 inches in the inside of a stone building to create a sprayed on application, naturally breathing version of dry lining. Now, this is really an amazing advantage and unique need that we have a lot for in Ireland. We desperately need that kind of application. Now, most people don't want to lose much space from the inside of their house. And so, you know, we could apply much thicker layers, but that wouldn't be economic and it wouldn't be desirable. So the fact that we can do exactly what dry lining does as regards the volume, and yet have a much better effect because it actually breathes. You don't have any potential for molds and funguses growing up behind layers of plastic, stuff like that, which is what really always happens with a dry lining, especially if people use things like Kingspan up against an old stone wall. What grows behind it, you wouldn't want to see unless you were a mycelium expert. Yeah, it's just that we have to find these alternatives, and we have done in Ireland. One of the first examples of the first hempcrete house to be built in the eco village in Clochjordan. But you know, we've, there have been many built by both a lot of self-built buildings and some that have been done by various groups of people as companies.
So with the last 12 months that we've had and the fact that you would normally be going around the world and teaching, how has the pandemic impacted on the growth and rollout of hemp building, and how do you see situation going forwards? Is it getting in the way of hemp, or is it that there's a growing interest in doing this and it hasn't, I guess, has it affected you, and in what ways, and how will you continue to do what you do going forwards?
Well, I think you have to be living in the space station outside Earth for COVID not to have had some effect on you. But it has affected every industry. Everything has slowed down to some extent. The construction sector has also slowed down. And of course, there's a lot of uncertainty. But hopefully this time that we've all had has given us all, everybody, time to reconsider things. And certainly there are, as you say, people from the investment world, from the political world, from the social world, from the health world, all looking now to, well, how can we do this in the future? Because obviously some of the things we were doing don't work. And when it comes to the growing awareness of climate change, which admittedly has been quite distracted by the whole virus situation, it is also a result of climate change that we have this situation, as are most of the discordant and unpleasant things around the world at the moment, whether it's refugees or civil wars or even just the chaos that erupted in America. When people get desperate and they don't understand, they haven't been explained at all clearly through their education what the situation in the world is, and you're promised that you should have more all the time. Oh, we'll have more. Because as a politician's point of view, who's going to vote for somebody who's going to tell them they're going to get less? But what we should be saying, to be honest, is to be honest. And that means that we've only got so much stuff on this planet. We're getting to the limits of what we can take away in the way we're doing. We have to get realistic about it. Otherwise, we will have nothing. So if you want something and you want a fairer share of something, you better get real. And that means building up communities. It means understanding what the world around you can actually provide, rather than thinking it's all going to magically appear in some supermarket or IKEA shelf. And that's the real change that I'm hoping that the virus has brought. But, and I hope that will bleed into situations as you just described, of investors thinking we have to get real about this. There's no point just throwing money at the continuing the dream that's collapsing as we throw the money at it. And that's my main hope. I think that that there's been a definite halt in the whole promotion of anything, because everybody's been at home and adults like to see things. They can be told stories, and some adults, unfortunately, will believe any old story. But children usually are better to be educated by stories, and adults need to see things. They need to be told the story and they need to see something. So, yes, we need many more examples, but there are, as I say, hundreds of examples of hemp materials being used in Ireland. I can claim some part in that, definitely, but many other people have taken that on since. And there are still people wanting to build homes or to renew old ones or to rebuild old houses, and especially in Ireland. And of course, Ireland might well see a resurgence in building that we might not have expected, as it becomes a more desirable place to live, as many other parts of the world are going to suffer from climate change far faster than we are and are already. And it is that food shortages which then create the protests, which then create the civil war, which then create the migrants, is all originally from climate change. And it's difficult to understand that sometimes, but that's really is the problem. And it's of course the causes of climate change. The ridiculous fossil fuel industry has created an expectation people that is just no longer possible. We're on the downward curve of oil reserves, which makes them more expensive, which means the business plan doesn't work. So there's already been a move to renewables, but we need so many other changes. And probably from a building point of view, I just end on this, that when I used to go to these building shows like Eco Build or whatever in Britain and Earl's Court back in the 90s and the noughties, there would be all these people fussing around, marveling over high-tech solutions to buildings with plastic envelopes and heat exchangers, etc., etc., etc. And I'd say to them, of course, there is a much lower tech solution to a lot of these problems. It costs between a fiver and maybe 100 if you want to buy a fancy version, and it's called a woolly jumper.
Yeah, look, I mean, and I guess even 10 years ago, that was the idea of having a thermometer to be aware of the temperature in your house. And like you say, if you put a jumper on, then that does bring you up a couple of degrees already. And then also, though, with hemp and lime insulation, we spoke with Rob Hopkins recently, and he was saying, you know, like, we're not advocating that to be sustainable, we have to live in cold caves. There's a midpoint between the two. Look, it's very interesting to talk to you and listen to your insights. How can people learn more about what you do and find out more about your work?
Well, my website has quite a lot of information about what I've done and where I've been, thehempbuilding.com. I also offer consultancies through that, and there are many people at the moment communicating me from around the world asking me to help them establish some sort of business. And of course, it usually starts off with a conversation of, well, have you got a couple of million? And that's not usually the case, but in some cases it can be. But my book is available through my website and from our publishing company, cpress.com or cpress.ie, sorry. The link on my website will send you there. I also have an ebook available, which is called Hemp Can't Save the Planet, But It Might Save Humanity, which is the sort of book of the stand-up info show that I do, which is part comedy, part information. We'll probably do very well without us, but we won't do without the planet. In the introduction of my second edition of my book, Joseph Little wrote that the era of heroic builders might be over. I tend to disagree with him on that, although I allowed him to keep that in. That, yeah, sure, we're not out there going, oh, we're going to build this crazy material. It has been used in many, many ways that are very high tech. But it's there are many other things we have to do, and of course the main thing is to produce the materials.
And like you say, I spoke to one farmer, and they said they are interested, but they're concerned that it's this year's fad, and that they go into it, and then the price falls. But hopefully, if it's done in a managed and rolled out way, that won't be a problem. Hopefully,
well, they'll be thinking about CBD because that's the only thing people are talking about at the moment. We would need to have a properly funded plan to build a unit and to be talking to people like the IFA and more central farming groups to understand that this is something that's, we're establishing an industry, something that has yet more scope for expanding. It's not just a sort of a bit like miscanthus was a complete disaster, and that's something that's put a lot of farmers off. Plus, hemp, if you don't have the machinery and the way of harvesting it and processing it, again, it's not going to be a success. It'll grow fine, but we have to be able to harvest it properly and fast and efficiently process it to be able to pay the farmers the proper price. They're not going to make huge amounts of money unless they get into some contract with a building firm and have their own processing. But that either needs to be done with a lot of ingenuity with second-hand bits of machinery, or you need to go for the big investment. And if you're going to go for the big investment, you might as well go for the big investment and round about 20 million, and you have the factory that I described that had a bale of hemp one end and a house comes out the other.
Yep, look, it's an exciting time, and hopefully we'll see it done in the right way. So look, thanks again for coming on and talking with us.
Thank you, and I hope we can make contact with your investing group.
Yes, I'm going to do that now. Okay, take care.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. You can sign up for more via our email digest, which does a weekly summary of all our podcasts, or you can follow us on your preferred podcasting platform of choice, or follow us on Twitter, Irish_Tech News, or Facebook, or LinkedIn or the website irishtechnews.ie. We will bring you more soon, and thanks for listening.